Did you know that Byers Airport Subaru is the oldest Subaru retailer in the entire country? And we're conveniently located right by the airport. We take pride in treating every customer like family, because that's what has kept us around for generations.
Right now, drive home a new 2025 Subaru Outback for 1.9% for up to 72 months.
Start your journey today at columbussubaru.com. Byers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.
See dealer for details. Offer ends 9/30/25.
There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable, available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Support American-made tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. They aren't affected by tariffs because their clothing products never left the U.S. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Travis Decker, he is the man, as of this recording, that is on the loose. There's a manhunt going on for this man out in the state of Washington. Could possibly be headed to Canada. That's what they believe. According to his Google searches, he was trying to figure out a way to get into Canada prior to his alleged murdering of his three little girls in a custody dispute with his wife. This is another heartbreaking story of familicide, where basically the family gets taken out. I can't have them. You can't have them. Nobody can have them. A real messed up way of thinking. And there were the warning signs. There was a lot of warning signs. The judge still thought, even though you're homeless and living in the back of your truck and you've taken these girls to a place to sleep amongst 20 other homeless men, you still can get weekends. That seems about right. Joining me to discuss, Robin Drake, retired FBI Special Agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. I'm just going to open it up to you on your opening thoughts on this case. It's the first time we're really diving into it. When you first hear about this, what goes through your mind?
First thing is the tragedy of the girls, and I immediately shifted to seeing his behavior pattern of really loving his girls. And then you hear the military background, and you see the PTSD and bipolar disorder, and then so you're automatically thinking murder suicide in situations like this, but with an escape plan. Tony, this is such a complicated situation, complicated man to me, that I've had a hard time wrapping around just because he's complicated. And it's hard to understand, first, the familiar side, obviously, but even more so, his behavior after it, which doesn't fit a pattern of what we typically see. So I think there's things we don't know. Is the best thing I can really think of right now.
What do we typically see in things like this, where the person that has, he has PTSD, he's also been diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, which we all know is the root to so many wonderful things in the people that we cover. It's a very dark way of thinking. It's a very messed up way of thinking, where your prism is not seeing reality on reality's terms. What would you say we would normally expect in a situation like this?
So with PTSD and the other disorder he has, those things come together. They can really exasperate each other. And we've seen this before in other individuals, but typically they're very, very self-induced violence, you know, towards themselves, not towards others. So even if you have familial side, you know, if you can't have them, no one can have them, which also means I don't want to live either. And that's why, you know, at first when I saw this, I started reshifting. Maybe he was, you know, because sometimes people are doing it to get back at the ex-wife. But that then doesn't quite fit the PTSD aspect of this, although it fits the custody issue of it. But then I said, well, let's reverse it. Maybe because people typically in this situation are all about self-harm. That's why the fact that he had an escape plan or a thought of going to Canada and evading people really is unusual. And so maybe I was thinking, like, maybe he did this to deny himself his daughters, you know, because that's another way to look at this. Was he wasn't doing this to lash out because he obviously doesn't dislike his daughter. He loves his daughters, as his behavior arc has shown. And then when we kind of rule out, maybe he did it against his wife, but maybe he did it against himself as well. But then why would he want to survive? So that's why it's a really confusing one to me. And so some of the other psychs I've been watching and listening to on this are really saying that there's probably details and data about his mental health issues that are undiagnosed, unknown, or we just don't understand the complexity of all the other factors that are coming together on this one, because it is really unusual.
Well, we are certainly dealing with cluster B personality disorder type here. Obviously, he was diagnosed with borderline, and that, you know, shares a lot of other areas too, where you might have a psychopath here. You might have a sociopath here as well. Just may not have been diagnosed as that. And that may lead to explaining more of those behaviors, not just the, I killed my kids and I still want to be alive. Because you're right. In his mind, from what we understand of him right now, he as twisted as this sounds, he killed his kids. In his mind, though, and this is where it gets messed up, in his mind, I think he viewed that as an act of love. I think he viewed it as an act of, well, for whatever reason, he didn't think it would be okay for those kids to be living with mom. He viewed himself as he is the right one to be with these kids. And it shows through his continued actions, even though he's in horrible, horrible situations, that he still really wants to see these kids and be with them. And I'm thinking in his twisted brain, it does kind of come down to, well, if I can't be around you all the time, you're safer dead than alive. That makes no logical sense. But when you try to put yourself in this guy's shoes and the prism that he's living in, a lot of victim mentality going on here. A lot of very selfish behavior going on here. And when you run it through the prism, when you got borderline, you got PTSD, you got a lot of things firing in weird places with all these other underlying disorders. I think you can get to this type of a mindset. It's not normal. It's not going to be very predictable. But I think that that's probably what is going on here. I think his version of love is not other people's version of love, but his version of love was this. And that's a scary thing, because that allows someone then to give themselves the permission to do that because they believe they're doing the right thing through their own prism. That's how I would take it.
That's a really interesting leap. Shame on me for not seeing that optic, because I was thinking, all right, so we're focusing on the ex-wife, we're focusing on him, and the girls were just a tool in his world of one versus the other. But actually, from the optic, like you just presented, of he did it as an act of love for them. Hey, when all other things are implausible and aren't explained, that one actually fits more than anything else I can think of. It's really, really interesting, because you said the word psychopath in there, and psychopathy has a lack of empathy, predator, and he just doesn't, you know, people that have high levels of psychopathy don't love their daughters as has been described again in social media and what we've seen, like he has. Being able to do harm against your daughters doesn't mean you're a psychopath. It means you have a lot of other crap going on sideways in your life with a broken brain, as he has clearly demonstrated. But I actually see that as an interesting thing, because otherwise, why would he want? I still don't get the why he wants to continue to live. Yeah, but the daughter angle for saving them, you put the Tony and Robin hat on together, and that's an interesting take on it. It really is. I hadn't heard that before.
It's a very different situation, but I think the only one recently that I can think of is like Lori Vallow. She believed killing those kids was the right thing to do through her prism. But through her prism, she was getting rid of the devils. She was getting, and they're going to be in a better place.
Complete nutter, though.
Completely. Completely. But she did function for a good portion of her life without getting in criminally trouble for anything, because she wasn't doing anything. This man led most of his life, you know, serving his country, you know, being a dad. Then things went really downhill. Something changed. Some way of his thinking made him not compatible with the rest of society, but he still functioned there, or he still existed there, I should say, although his prism was completely off from everyone else. That's why I'm wondering what was going through his mind. What was telling him that killing these kids is the right thing to do? Was it just a big F you to the ex-wife? I mean, that could be the simple explanation. And on the surface, that's what everyone would go to. But there's usually a little more motivation to it, especially the fact that he's still alive and he's still going. I mean, maybe that is it. I don't know. We don't know the answer. I don't know that we ever will, because if he does get caught alive, who knows what his story is going to be at that point? Because these are probably thoughts and emotions that are coming and going. Had it been a different day, maybe he would not have killed the kids. Maybe he would have tried to run to Canada with them. But for whatever reason, at that moment in time, something triggered him enough to think this is the best option to go with. I don't know.
Yeah, the Lori Vallow analogy—it's an interesting one. I'm glad you thought of it, that gave you the leap on this case, because I think it's an interesting angle. Although, remember, Lori Vallow did that all for her own benefit because of life insurance policies and to rid herself of kids, so she could live her life of fantasy life in Hawaii.
Yes, you know, but she believed it though. That's the thing. Was that the ultimate reason that she did it?
But yes, she's also a cultist though too.
Yeah. You know? I agree. The ends justified the means in her mind. They don't make any sense.
I just see his connection to his kids, even though he killed them, as deeper than Vallow's is with hers.
Yeah.
I know it's like apples and different kind of apples rather than apples and oranges.
He's a Fuji. She's a Granny Smith.
Yeah. I just have, you know, just because of his military background, just because of PTSD, you know, and the life he's leading before it went sideways, with healthy relationships with people in his life, you know, I want to have more compassion and understanding for him than I do for Vallow, because she doubles down on Nutto.
Yeah.
And she's just despicable to me. And so, but at the same time, again, really interesting take. It was like you said, if he did it for the kids to save them, why not bring them with him?
Yeah.
Because again, I think there's so much mental health issues that I'm not licensed or have experience with on this one, that it gets way far out of a field of understanding, because every time we think we have a theory on it, it just doesn't completely hold. Mm-hmm. That's why I think there's a lot of factors in here. Cause even to get his wife, why would he do it to the daughters he loves so much? See what I mean? I mean, there's other ways to do that. Because we've seen cases like this before with custody issues. Instead of going after the kids, you just go after her. Mm-hmm. He's got the experience. Just knock her off. Just hire a hitman. We've seen this in so many other cases where there's a custody issue, and then the spouse that's got the kids gets knocked off, or is it an attempt to knock him off? You know. So, but again, those are as broken brains as those are. This one is more broken. There's a lot of brokenness in here, and I don't quite understand.
Well, if it is the ex-wife he wants to hurt, what's the worst way he can hurt her? It's not killing her. It's this.
True. But at the same time, we've seen, again, we just look for those patterns.
Yeah.
You know, and we've seen it the other cases, even though other cases, they could have gone after the kids as well because the ex-wife wanted them, but they went after the spouse instead. And instead, he went after the kids, which is unusual. Because again, the relationship he seemed to have with them seemed strong.
Yeah.
He didn't seem to treat them like objects, you know. And so in order to do what he did, he really had to objectify them, you know, to bind them with zip ties, you know, and asphyxiate. That is a horrible way to kill someone.
Yeah.
It's very personal. It's very close, you know, which means it's very traumatic. Very, very dark, horrible things going through that brain that can do that.
Something happened there. Something happened there that broke him beyond where he had been. He was not the same person by any means. Let's talk about Travis Decker. He's out there in the woods, at least as far as we know right now, as of this recording. They're still looking for him. We don't know if he's dead or if he's alive. There's been reports of possible sightings, but I mean, if you look at the guy, and this is just one picture of him, if you look at other pictures of him online, he looks tremendously different. He kind of changes his looks up quite a bit. But he is kind of a generic looking dude. You know, if you see him out at the mall, if you have a mall still, or wherever, he kind of blends in. He's just a normal looking guy, where there's not a lot of pieces about him that I think would stand out and make one go, oh, there he is. I think he can blend into a crowd pretty good unless people are paying attention and looking for this man specifically. So it's hard to know where he has been seen, if he has been seen. But let's talk about his training. And you can speak to this with your military background. Staff sergeant rank, expert infantry badge represents years of tactical training combined with his mental illness creates a uniquely dangerous profile. With all of the training that he has and the ability to be out there in nature, he's been out there before and survived. What sort of skills does this man have that most people would not, who killed their family and then went to the woods?
You know, it's interesting, Tony. This is an area I've looked at a lot just because of my own backpacking in the woods, my own Marine Corps time as well. And people sometimes will make this leap, and I think the news is doing this right now, the mainstream media is saying that because he has this military background, he has military and survival skills. No, it's really kind of apples and oranges. When you're deployed in the infantry and have the skill set he has and the training he has, you generally are supplied, you know, when you go out in the field. And you have resources that are available to you, even though you're out in the field and you're doing these, you know, high-speed operations. But the one thing that sets him apart because of his background, being a staff sergeant, infantry, and this experience, is he has experience in reps in suffering, patience, and being uncomfortable. That is what the edge is that he has and what the military has, is that you can really suck in situations and just keep on going. So that's what the training really is. And that's why he didn't rely on his military training. He actually went and actually lived off grid for a while. He did these backcountry things because he didn't have reps in that. Because I am a survival show junkie, reality survival shows. And regardless of them, with people military backgrounds, it is a skill set that's not the same as a survivalist. And we've seen this with other people too, on other cases where they said, oh, he's got military background, he must be able to survive well in the woods. Not necessarily, because survivalists and survival skills in backcountry is a very, very different thing than actually military background. Military skilled in suffering, patience, and being uncomfortable for long periods of time, which he's going through. So if he's still alive. So that's why I think he added on top of those skills before he did this. That's why which is also interesting. You know, this was not impulsive. This was a plan.
Yeah. And that's what is also very interesting about this is, you know, we were speculating earlier, did something kind of snap at that moment and he decided, but the evidence doesn't really point that way. It points like this was very premeditated, at least getting out there in the wilderness certainly was, because he's done it. He's learned how to do it after the fact, after he got out of the military. So that would imply, you know, one of two things: either he wanted to be kind of an off-grid type dude, or he was planning for doing exactly this. I mean, and the fact that he did come in with the zip ties, with the plastic bags, with everything when he picked the kids up, he knew what he was going to do. So there was some time sitting there going, I'm going to kill my kids. And enough to, you know, go pick him up. Now, the mom said he seemed a bit off that day. But the court said, you know, it's time for him to go visit the kids, even though he hasn't followed any of the orders that we give him to go get help. Still, the law says you have to give him over. He seemed to have this in his mind for quite a while. I think that's what makes it even more disturbing, because it's like, what kind of human being are we dealing with here? You know, as a behavioral expert, all of that, when you put it together, is that what makes this so troubling?
Yeah, because he had also no background of violence or aggression either. So again, it really didn't fit a pattern. But you hit a key thing right there too, that the ex-wife saw that or felt something was off, because there's a deviation from pattern. You know, it reminded me, as you're saying that, you know, in the world of aviation, which we've seen horrible aviation tragedies recently, or whether you're on a naval ship, the pilot in command or the captain of the boat is literally the person in charge of the safety. They have the final call for everything. In this case, believe it or not, I think the mother can make that final call for safety. And, you know, we want to rely on the courts because we think the courts and the system is in place. And they are. They're in places for safety and security. But at the final moment, the decision can be the mother's or should be the mother's. Mm-hmm. Because when something doesn't quite fit, make that call. Like when I'm flying in the air traffic control will tell me where to go, how to go, and what altitudes to be at and everything. But if I see there's an issue in the air or something doesn't make me feel right, there's a weird noise in a plane, there's something going on behind me, there's something, I make that final call and I tell them, here's what I'm doing and here's why I'm doing it. Screw you, because safety comes first. And believe me, this is not victim blaming on the mother here whatsoever. No, this is more of a trying to help people empower themselves. When something doesn't feel right, it means you're picking up on incongruencies from what you normally see. Mm-hmm. There's something going on. No emergency takeoff. Slow down, assess, and then just back away. Get out of that situation, because you could be wrong. You could be right. But you know what? I'd rather be wrong 95% of the time and right 5% of the time, and I'm going to save a life.
Because you can't go back and fix it. Yeah, you can't fix it if you're if you are right, but you feel like you have to do the wrong thing because of a piece of paper or because some judge who doesn't really know your case very well and is just having a shitty day and is like, well, whatever. That's not safety. That's not going to protect your kids. That judge is not going to protect your children. And there's no accountability for them either if they get the ruling wrong. And I'm not victim blaming either. I think this needs to be something that is really evaluated. It is certainly something that can be abused by parents who are selfish and don't want to share custody of their children when there is no reason to be fearful. But there are plenty of situations where there is plenty of reason to be fearful. And if that person who is there to see your children, who already has been diagnosed with borderline, has been diagnosed with PTSD, has shown a pattern of irresponsible behavior, going and taking the kids to go sleep at a home with a bunch of other homeless men, it's insane. Then the judge still thinks, oh yes, you can have unsupervised visitation. Clearly not a good choice by that judge. And as a parent, you're supposed to be abiding by those rules. But at the end of the day here, if you're ever in that situation and you're a parent, go and lead on the side of maybe maybe you need to protect your kids. Maybe there is some reason that there's incongruent behavior here, because you can't get them back if you make the wrong choice. And unfortunately, that is exactly what happened here. A system basically forced a mother to give her kids to a person she knew was not safe, even though she'd objected to it. And then exactly what she's been objecting to and saying, hey, this could happen, he's not safe, happened. And who's going to be accountable? Well, him, maybe, but it might be dead. But the people who said, this is what you have to do, there's no accountability there. They move on to the next case. And that's a messed up thing that we have in our society, where the rights seem to lean heavier to the potential abuser than it does to the people that are truly trying to protect the kids.
And also, I mean, I don't know it. I didn't hear this, but you know, I always try to place yourself in the shoes of someone. You know, if she was caring about him, even though they're divorced, about his well-being, and you know that the only thing that actually gave that might be able to save him from himself or get him back on a righteous path of mental health would be seeing your kids. You know, you're going to be compelled and influenced that way as well, out of her own compassion for him and his well-being. So it's a really, really tough situation. That's why, as always, we've said it multiple times, loving critics in our lives. Yeah. You know, just don't be the sole one making the decision on this. Bounce it off someone who's more objective for you and cares deeply about you, because big decisions like this, when you see red flags going off, you're not going to be objective enough for yourself as you might need to be. Have someone you can bounce it off. Say, hey, here's what I'm seeing. Here's what's going on. Let's take a big pause and let me bounce it off here. And if no one comes, in other words, if there's not a, let's just go to the behaviors of trust. Mm-hmm. Open, honest communication and transparency. I need to have that in order to feel safe, so I can feel safe leaving my kids with you. Yeah. I want to know, I want verification that you're on your meds. I want verification of where they're going. I want to know who they're going to be going with. I want to know, see, again, and if there's a lack of transparency and there's an incongruence between the tempo of communication, we're backing off. And so And I'm sorry. And that's something you can reasonably then articulate to law enforcement, you know, or a judge or a court or something else. Granted, I know systems sometimes get bogged down in paperwork and data without the personalization side. But I remember inside the FBI when I was working, when it came to cases that involved human beings, which everything I dealt with involved human being, people want to see it on paper. They want to know what you're doing. They want to know mm-hmm. the tempo of the case. And they're looking for facts, data, and details, which generally don't involve people because people have a hard time writing about a relationship and the tempo of it and the development of it. But when you can then articulate, hey, here's a pattern I've seen in the past. Here's what's deviated. Here's what I need for transparency. In other words, you just have to be able to articulate what you are seeing that's deviated from what I'm expecting to see. Because mm-hmm. when you tell law enforcement or you tell a court or you tell a judge, I just didn't feel it was safe. That's not good enough.
No.
Or it might be, but not with everyone. But you need to then be able to articulate it was this, 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 and this. And so that's the real takeaway here. If you don't feel like something's right, articulate it.
Yeah.
Make it a fact and make it a data, something that you saw, something that seems different from the past. And if you can't do it by yourself, then you say, hey, you know, John, Mary, Joe, you know, what did you see? What specifically? That's why asking that what question, what forces us to be specific? And not say, when you say, why did you feel that way? But you say, what specifically did you see that deviated? And mm-hmm. that forces people to kind of zero in and get really granular. And that's what helps people articulate it to courts, to others, and to law enforcement.
It makes it go a step above beyond just he said, she said. Because if you're just like, yes. well, he's not safe. And that's how most people will handle it because they're just not that detailed. Or realize or understand what you need to prove to get your point across. If you have the receipts, if you can prove something, if you have actual evidence beyond just what you're saying, but if you don't even have that, if you have a log of everything showing this is this communication, here's what happened, this happened here at this time, the court's going to respect that a hell of a lot more than just the guy over here with PTSD and borderline personality going, I want my rights. If you go, here's why that's not a safe idea, a judge will listen to you. You may not yes. every judge, but if you are the one that's coming in prepared, confident, organized, calm, and not irrational, you will get a decision more in your favor, more likely than not. Again, I'm not victim shaming here. I have no idea what she presented. She may have done that, but more so for education for people out there in those situations, start logging that shit. Even if you're like, it'll never get that bad. You don't know that. And when I went through a divorce with a borderline, I had to do it. I had a log going on. I was writing everything down, all the crazy behavior, everything that was incongruent, that was not healthy. Luckily, I never had to use it in court. Mine just ran away. In this sort of case, yeah, he ran away, but he killed the kids too. That was right. my fear as well. So it was, I'm going to have to document everything if I need to take this to court. So even if you're like, well, it takes some time, but trust me, if it's going to keep your children alive, it is worth it. There's an episode of The Office. Do you watch The Office at all?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you remember The Office, Michael Scott? He has the GPS. They're out giving gift baskets to their clients. And the GPS
yes,
says, turn right. And Dwight is in the car going, it's a lake, Michael. This is a boat ramp. It says, turn right. It says... But it's the GPS, it's wrong. No, it is right. And he just does it because the system said, this is where you have yep. to go. And then he drove his car straight into a lake. That is what I feel so many of us do because we think this system's going to protect us and that this border over here is going to protect us and this bumper over here is going to protect us. At the end of the day, who has your best interest at heart? You. Yourself
yes.
more than anyone else. Just like you were saying in your flight, in aviation. Yeah, you got your tower. They are there. You need to listen to them. Unless you see something else that they simply do not have knowledge of that is right. going to impact your safety, right. you have to make the call. And in cases like this, more parents need to be empowered enough to make the call. And if
So here's a great philosophy that we've had in my family for a while now that I use. I use it with my wife, with my children, you know, my adult children. And that is every time we deal with a situation that someone has to make a tough decision outside of our family, we always say this, what can I do to make it easy for them to say yes? side with me. Go and so in a case like this, if you start dealing with custody issues and in this case in particular, the first thing you need to be thinking of is what can I do to make it easy for the judge to side with me? Mm-hmm. And part of that is the second you start getting into these things, you start baselining. What I mean by baseline is, to your point, you start journaling, you start writing, you start photographing your kids, your interactions, the places that pickups are happening, your observations. You start detailing and you date it, because how many times have we seen in court where if someone presents a journal, because the journal says, well, it can be made up. Yeah, but you know what? You're not making up stuff on the second. And when you actually have a pattern that you're displaying for a judge or custody, family court, where you're journaling and you have periods of time, like every single visitation, every single day, boom, 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 periods of time. All of a sudden, we start seeing a deviation. Mm-hmm. You can then articulate that to the court, and what's the other parent have, or the person that might be going off the rails have? Nothing. Yeah. So who's the court going to side? Because remember, systems can fail, but they're going to fail because it's a team. Mm-hmm. You got to do your part to make it easy for them to help keep your kids safe. So here's the thing. No one wants kids to be in jeopardy. No one wants people to be unsafe. But what are you going to do? See, there it is, that what question. What specifically are you going to do to make it easy for them to side with you to keep your kids safe? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the mindset to have. Part of that is keeping records, because that when what you're doing by record keeping is you are baselining. Yeah. Everyone's always asking, what's behavioral baseline? It's just observing over periods of time to see patterns of behavior. That's mm-hmm. what you're doing for the court.
And it shows you're competent enough to do that, because I can guarantee Travis Decker was not competent enough to make a log of, number one, he had nothing to log against mom, but that wouldn't be going through his mind. He's not operating.
It wouldn't make sense either. Yeah.
No, it wouldn't make sense. He's not operating on that sort of a plane.
So think about this. So even if he was journaling as well, and you have mm-hmm. two journals that are now going to be presented to the court,
yeah,
I guarantee his broken brain is not congruent with thoughts and behaviors. I've talked to people, I've interviewed people, like it's, from you and I doing the show together, we sometimes have some interesting cats that reach out for us, and you get these long diatribe emails from people from time to time that make no sense whatsoever. Even though they're journeying their asses off, they're making no sense. So you say, so there's an issue here. And so I guarantee you, if this individual, if Decker was journaling, or and you compare it to the mom's journal, the apples and oranges,
it would stand out. It would without a doubt stand out. What do you make of this aspect of it? Because in some ways here, looks like he planned this out pretty well. He had the skills to do it. He trained himself for it. He had the stuff to go off into the wilderness. But he Googled how to get to Canada and various things of that nature, which were found right away. Like, okay, he had some premeditation here going on. Again, that it's always funny because the Google seems to take down a lot of people when it comes to murder, when it comes to... what do you make of that? Because it seems to me this is an obvious thing not to do, or you do it in some sort of rogue way that can't be searched. I mean, there are ways of doing that, but nope, just did that. So just right out there, right in the digital moment evidence as out there, how to get to Canada. That seems bizarre if you're really planning this in a real slick way.
So what people generally will do, and we've seen this in so many cases, they'll do a good job of planning out the actual execution of what they're doing, but they don't plan out how to research the execution mm-hmm. or plan for their event. And so that becomes very impulsive, the planning stages. And so when things become impulsive during the planning stages, you're going to do stupid things like that. So even if he's aware of the fact that, people are going to look at my Google searches, in the moment, it's like, oh man, I'm going to have to get to Canada. I better, and so immediately, before even thinking, you're saying, I got to Google how to get in Canada. Mm-hmm. Because literally what is probably going through his mind is like, well, I can't go across the border at the normal border place. I'm going to hike through the woods. I got to get through the woods, So that's what, he's just scheming in his mind how to do that. And it becomes very impulsive. And so mm-hmm. planning stages can be impulsive as you're planning a systematic, thoughtful process of execution. So here's a tip for people that are trying to get away with something.
Let's skip plan, that.
Plan how you're going to plan before you start planning.
The more you know. We should have the star.
Yeah. You know, another great example, you know, again, it still hasn't gone to trial yet. We don't know. But, you know, Brian Koberger, mm-hmm. he didn't plan how to plan.
No.
He did a decent job, but still didn't plan enough about how to plan, because law enforcement's ability, when they care about a case, to go back and do deep dives on you, it's pretty impressive. Even just since I retired, it's much more impressive now. And a quick point I didn't highlight enough about his military background, I don't want to disregard it, is mm-hmm. also most likely in there is his training on evasion. You mm-hmm. know, so if he's an infantry guy, you know, if he's trained in any kind of reconnaissance, like I know Marine Corps Scout snipers are trained really, really well on how to stay hidden, how to evade detection and do reconnaissance and things like that and stay off the grid. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's part of it. But also evasion and evasion of detection is different than survival. So I just wanted mm-hmm. to make sure I did include he has probably skills in evading, but maybe not survival.
How long do you think this guy can stay off the grid and not get caught without dying?
Well, 3 days without water and about 21 days without food is what the body can survive on. Mm-hmm. So he's got, and that's why, you know, what I'm seeing is they're staking out and they're looking at those kind of places that, unless he has caches that he planned mm-hmm. out ahead of time about how he's going to do that. That's one aspect of it. The other thing too that I know that they're doing is when you have skilled and trained trackers, one of the things that trained trackers are doing is they're very, very good at reading terrain and knowing courses and routes of travel people are typically going to take mm-hmm. because of ease of travel. Because he's going to, so say he's in a mindset of I can suffer well, I can bushwhack well, but after a certain period of time, you're going to get exhausted and slowed down by that. And impatience is going to come into play. Mm-hmm. A sense of safety from not seeing contact with anyone is going to come into play. So some laziness is going to come into play, which is going to then, the terrain is going to start channeling you in logical areas and logical routes of travel. And so most likely they got trackers doing just that as well, just assessing mm-hmm. viable sources of water and food, but also assessing the terrain and viable tracks that he might be taking. And so that's where they're going to be focusing efforts.
If he's alive and they don't find him dead, how do you, or both cases here, like you just described, at some point fatigue is going to come into play, mm-hmm. mentally, physically, all of it, because he's human. When he reaches that point, when it's just, I'm going to take this easier route over here because it just looks like a better terrain to go through. There's water that way. Yes, it opens me up more, but he's probably going to lean more into, I'm exhausted, I'm good, this so far, they haven't found me, and then you have that. Or you have the, I'm exhausted, I'm just going to end it. Do you think we find him dead, or do you think we find him still, you know, trying to forage his way through the forest?
The longer this goes, my laws of probability in my head are saying we're going to find him dead.
Yeah.
Or not find him at all, because he's going to be hidden under a rock someplace just dead.
Yeah.
Because again, so if you couple his ability to suffer long periods of time in deprivation, and who knows what the effects of food and calorie deprivation, sleep deprivation is going to exacerbate his PTSD and his other mental health issues, medications. I mean, there's a lot of things that are playing in that broken brain. Him, again, I'm just surprised he didn't off himself already.
Yeah.
I think the likelihood of him doing that grows greater every single day he's out there because of... Not because of a conscious choice. I think his unconscious broken brain is in total control right now.
Yeah.
It's gonna be But again, I don't want to disregard the fact that it's all still choices he is making, so he's still accountable for all his actions.
Yeah, 1,000%.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.